This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
The droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fume. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
Outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and wife, Nancy.
Hi!
On today's episode, we've got author Christy Golden on the show to talk Star Wars, Dark Disciple, and even a little bit of Warcraft. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show!
Yes, we've got Christy Golden on. We recorded an interview with her, so, just to note, we are discussing spoilers from Dark Disciple, so if you haven't read the book, don't listen, because you'll be spoiled, and don't come complaining to us.
Nope, don't come complaining to us. I don't have any notes in front of me, so just real quick, check out our sponsors. It's audible.com, Her Universe. Check out the blog, links there. Yep. Help us keep the lights on.
Yep.
And with that, we're going to cut on over to our interview with Christy Golden. We'll see you on the other side.
Bye. Hi, we're back, and we have Christy Golden on with us. Thanks, Christy, so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So whenever we have a guest on the show, we always start with a particular question, and it's, how did you become a Star Wars fan?
I was one of the vanguard. I was 13 years old in 1977, and I remember sitting in the theater and watching Star Wars unfold and just knowing somehow that this was going to be big for me. And sure enough, that whole summer it was big for me because I pestered my parents to drop me off every single weekend. And they would drop me for the first showing. This was back in the day when they didn't empty theaters and you could just sit right through and come pick me up at dinner time. And that was my summer of 1977. So, yeah, I got hooked early.
That sounds amazing.
I feel very lucky, actually, to have been one of the first.
It's pretty yeah. cool. And I know that you are also a fan of Luke Skywalker, so I just have to do a shout-out for that because he's also my favorite.
Yay!
Going back to your first Star Wars novel, that was Omen from the Fate of the Jedi series, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, could you tell us how you got the gig to write Star Wars? And I'd imagine as a longtime fan, you probably had a pretty strong reaction when you found out.
Oh yeah, and it was just some ordinary day. I had no idea that anything like this was in the works, and I got a call from my agent. And she says, how'd you like to write Star Wars? And I'm just like, what?
What?
Yes. is that an actual question? So, yeah. And, you know, the news, it was just, I was thinking, well, just a Star Wars book. And then it's like, oh, no, you're going to write 3 books in a 9 book series. And they're all going to be hardcovers. And you have to write it with 2 other authors and go. So it was kind of a bit of a baptism by fire. But I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
No pressure at all.
Star Wars, a mega series, no biggie.
I got that.
So we actually saw you at Dragon Con last year, and you mentioned that you had an idea for a Vestara Kai story in which she became sort of a Joan of Arc figure.
Yes.
For the Lost Tribe of the Sith, which yeah. drew a very, very enthusiastic response from the audience. What do you think drew so many people to the character of Vestara?
Well, I think it's the classic story, isn't it? You know, Romeo and Juliet. And we have this history with the Skywalkers that they do reach people. They can find the good in people that other people have given up on. And that was just such a powerful thing to want to hope for. And of course, since we're talking spoilers and since this is an older book, of course it was sadly futile. But I think what made it so tragic is that Vistara actually didn't want it to be, but it really felt almost like a doom. Like she was, could not escape this no matter what she wanted and what she tried. And I think that made it a little more poignant and more memorable than just a, no, I'm Sith and I'm just going to get you. I think she always envisioned that they would probably kill each other and die together, because I don't think she could see being without him, and she knew it would destroy her. So I think she was a pretty complex character, and I certainly enjoyed writing her.
Now moving on to Dark Disciple, we're wondering how that book came about. I know some people have speculated that because you were tapped to write Sword of the Jedi and that didn't come about, that this might have been not necessarily a replacement, but just, you know, a book that fell on your lap because of that. But we were just kind of curious as how that particular story came about.
Well, you know, yes, I did have some history with that. And so I certainly was on their forefront of authors that they knew were available to do work. Mm-hmm. And it was really something that they knew I'd done tie-ins before. I mean, excuse me, novelizations before. And after having worked with me on Fate of the Jedi, Shelley really knew what my strengths were. And this seemed to be a project that just played to everything that I really enjoy most about writing. The romance angle, the fun characters, the tragic bent that the story took, and that exploration of what makes good people go bad and how far is too far, and when does the end justify the means, does it ever? All those wonderful existential philosophical questions that I love getting my little paws on.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really liked about Dark Disciple, was the sort of the big character exploration with Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress. I think that, you know, that was really much what appealed to me about the book a lot. You know, getting into their heads is not something you see a lot when it comes to, you know, a character turning to the dark side or having to deal with that in the case of Ventress.
Yeah, there was so much there to work with her history from the Clone Wars. She was such a well-developed character, and the scripts were very solid. And one thing that I did get to do, and this was, we discussed kind of the approach of how to turn these 8 scripts into a full-length novel, which is a completely different medium, and what sort of extra freedoms that gave us. And we really wanted to see this become something believable. In order for the latter part to have an effect, you really had to want these two to be together. You really had to like them both as individuals and as a team, as a couple. And so I got to spend, I got to write a little bit more than what was actually there in the scripts to flesh that out and kind of slow that down, to see them become first kind of guarded co-workers almost, and then a partnership, and then friends, and then finally... and finally falling in love with one another.
Yeah, and the introduction between the two characters I thought was absolutely fantastic.
I can claim no credit for that, but it was a lot of fun to write.
I can imagine.
As just about everyone knows, Dark Disciple was based on unproduced scripts for the Clone Wars.
Andy wanted to know, how difficult is it to bring your creative ideas to a storyline that's really already been set out in script by other writers?
Well, I think it's the same thing, the same mentality that you use going into any kind of a media tie-in work and even history. Because if you're writing, for instance, a historical novel, unless you're doing alternate history, you kind of have to stick to the events. You know, I mean, you know, people know that Lincoln got shot at Ford's Theater. It's something that we all know going in. And I really didn't have that much of a problem with it. I am trained as a playwright, and so I'm very familiar and comfortable with the script form. I also did a lot of theater, so I know how an actor can take just lines on a page and make it something more. And that's kind of what I think I can do as a writer of a novelization, is I can take this and I can kind of filter it through me and hopefully inhabit the characters sufficiently so that they come to life on the page.
And sort of related to that, Juan wanted to know, how did you go about translating a story that was taking place over multiple episodes and multiple arcs and meshing it into one story? Because obviously there's endings to every episode, endings to every arc, and you have to kind of tie that into a story that went over a whole novel and not be, okay, this story is over and now this story is over.
Right. Somebody else asked, you know, if the chapters ended where, if certain chapters ended where an episode did. And I don't know that they did. It wasn't certainly something I set out to do. I wanted to find the pace of the story. And as I said, I was able to bring other things into it, some subplots, some other characters in it, things like that. Kenobi was in the scripts, but he was not nearly as prominent. And he's a major third character in the storyline. He certainly, you know, gets billing below Vos and Ventress, but he's a very major character. And as I wrote, I found that I liked having him kind of as a measuring stick, sort of our guideline, our way of judging things. So I was able to use him. I wrote some extra scenes. I wrote some extra characters. And in general, just tried to find the rhythm of a novel. And as I have done quite a few in my day, that's something that I am fairly familiar with by this point.
So with both the Fate of the Jedi series and Dark Disciple, you were really doing a lot of really collaborative work in getting these books written. What were the big differences between the Fate of the Jedi series and Dark Disciple as far as the whole collaboration with other creative folks went?
I hope this translates. It was a more vertical line, kind of chain of command, and Fate of the Jedi was more horizontal. I mean, there were clearly people who it went to first, and then second, and then third, and then fourth, whereas Fate of the Jedi was send an email to Aaron, reply to an email from Troy, send out something else, ask someone else. And it was a little bit more, this was much more streamlined. There was a very clear path to follow, especially now that we are doing canned books. Mm-hmm. And so Story Group has to sign off on everything. So it kind of meant, you know, you could see where the next tier was going to be. It didn't really surprise you.
Right. And that was another question. You know, we've talked to John Jackson Miller and several other authors who've written Star Wars books, both kind of pre and post Story Group. And he mentioned, you know, there wasn't as much of a difference as far as, you know, his process. And I was wondering if, you know, the same went for you.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned before that Kenobi was not in the scripts as much, but you know, liked him and wanted to include him in the story. You know, there are so many characters in this book that are really popular characters. You know, Ventress and Voss have a big following, and then of course Anakin and Obi-Wan and even Dooku. And you know, obviously, as far as characters from the movies, you know, you have a pretty good background. But for people like Ventress and, you know, Voss, how did you go about sort of getting into their characters? And did you, you know, have reference that you went to, or, you know, just spoke to people in the story group and try to get ideas of how their characters were?
Well, one of the lovely things about doing this particular project is that there is a fantastic vault of reference material, and it's called the TV show The Clone Wars. And it's right there on my Netflix, and I can watch it anytime
That's
I
very
want,
convenient.
And I certainly did. And that was the first. The first thing was, of course, to read the scripts. Secondly was to watch. I had the animatics for the first four episodes. And then after kind of getting that storyline in my head, I just sat down and I watched the whole show because I wanted to get not just Ventress and Voss's one episode appearance, but I wanted to get the feel of the show. I wanted to get the pacing, and I wanted to get the characters and get their voices in my head so that I could recreate them at will. And it was just a really good show. I really enjoyed it. I watched a lot of episodes, mainly the ones involving Ventress, repeatedly, just so I could nail that. And but I just really enjoyed the whole thing. And by the end, I was just sad, because it's such a tragic story when you really look at it, both for the Jedi and the clones.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have said that they could hear the characters talking when they read the book, and that was definitely the case for me. And it felt like I was reading a Clone Wars show, if that that makes sense. I feel like, I was like, okay, yeah, this is very, very Clone Wars.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. I'm so pleased.
I was curious about, the romance with Ventress and Voss. Obviously, they fall in love. They have a pretty intense relationship. And one of the things I liked about it is that it's very open to reader interpretation as far as what happens between them. But with characters such like this, how do you go about, having two, characters that haven't really interacted before meet, fall in love, have a tragic relationship, and have it come off so believable?
I think the thing that worked for me is, as I said, I really just immersed myself in the Clone Wars and really just listened till I got the voice down and the gestures and how she would move and things like that. And Voss was easy to get, the playful Voss. The darker Voss came a little bit later in the book as he grows. I think characters have, we talk about actors in a movie saying, wow, they have chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think characters in books can have it too. There are times when I do pairings in media work and they're not my choices, and sometimes they don't work, and sometimes they work really, really well. And these two, as soon as I just saw even just the animatics, I was like, this is going to be great. This is going to be a lot of fun. I see where their vulnerabilities are. I see where their similarities are. I see where their differences are. And I really did not have very much difficulty just dropping into their characters. And I love doing character work. That's probably my strong suit, that and dialogue. And so it was really quite joyful to be with these characters who were such good company. They're just great characters that you enjoy spending time with.
Yeah, and I really liked Dooku's involvement, even though he wasn't in the story that much. I feel like he's a character that didn't get as much development in the films as he could have. And his appearances in the Clone Wars and then in this, I definitely could hear Christopher Lee speaking whenever he was on the page.
Oh, well, I wanted to give him some gravitas, and I wanted to make him a real deep, scary villain, not scary, jump out of the corners and scare you type, but I mean someone who was terrifying on a really deep level because you knew it just went bone deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to open with the scene that I did to demonstrate that, and also to demonstrate why the heck the Jedi would do something like this. I felt they really needed to have a motivation, and I didn't read the other scripts that did not get produced, so I don't know if there was a particular inciting incident that happened off screen. I'm not familiar with that, but I knew that for the book we had to have something.
Right.
So that the reader would be, whoa, oh my, yeah, you're right, we got to do something.
So this is where the spoilers come into play.
So listeners who don't want to be spoiled for big stuff, we're giving you your second warning.
Yeah. So, we have to ask a question about Ventress and, her outcome in the book. I was very upset when I read it, as, I should have been, because she's one of my favorite characters, but, we're curious as to, her outcome. Was it predetermined? How much liability or how much leeway did you get as far as writing her end? And is it really a big responsibility. I'm imagining you take it as a big responsibility to give an end to a character like Ventress.
Oh, it was enormous. It was, and I knew that going in. And the death was in the script.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, we all kind of briefly entertained the opportunity. Well, does she really have to die? And I was like, no, they can run off together. It'll be great. Let me do it. And because I didn't want to do it, because I wanted them to be together, because I really, really liked them. And I wanted so much for them to have a happy ending. And the decision was made that, no, we really need to do this. This was clearly the intent from the beginning, and it would not really honor the storyline, and it would not honor the character's development, because this is not a useless death. This is not a futile death. This is something that was chosen with not just her heart or her head, but with the help of the Force. She had a chance to see all things. And I deliberately left that vague. I have my own theories about what she saw. But I wanted to leave that to the reader's imagination. But it was something that she chose as powerfully as she ever chose anything in her life.
And I do have to give you a ton of credit. I mean, it's so easy to just fridge female characters in a circumstance like this. But you really gave her all of her agency there. And it was just really powerfully and well written and well done.
Thank you.
So we have some listener questions. Jonathan asks, which do you prefer, the sci-fi or the fantasy aspects of Star Wars? Or do you have no preference at all?
I'm more of a fantasy writer and reader. Mm-hmm. I grew up on, you know, the Blue Fairy book, on Lord of the Rings and the Chronicles of Narnia. And I came to science fiction through Star Trek at age 10 and catching it in reruns. So while I enjoy it, I really resonate with the mythic themes, and that's probably one reason I love Star Wars so much, was because it was based on the hero's journey as laid out and observed by Joseph Campbell in his research. And so it has that deep resonance. It has that mythos to it. It has the Force, which is one of the most cool concepts ever. And so I think that's what I resonate more than, rather than the technical about what makes blasters go and what type of ship does what. And it was hard for me in Fate of the Jedi because I had so much technical stuff to learn. Yeah. And I remember in the third book, I'm like, all right, I owe it to the readers. I got to give them a really good space battle. And so there's one that it took me a really long time to research and to write, because that's not something that comes naturally to me. But I wanted to make sure that they had a really good one in there.
We appreciated that a lot. We're a big fan of the space battles.
And Sarah asked, if you could write a book centered around any character in the Star Wars universe, pre and post story group, who would it be and why?
Well, obviously, as we discussed earlier, Luke Skywalker. I love Luke. He's such a seminal character and changed my life. And getting to meet Mark Hamill at Celebration this year just put me over the moons, over the two suns. And so I'd love to do him. I really did enjoy Vestara. And I got so terribly, terribly fond of Windorvan, who is the most unlikely climbing to the top character, who was never intended to be that. He was a throwaway character.
Oh, he was my dark horse favorite of that series.
Oh, he really just kind of took on, clearly reluctantly, took on a life of his own. And it just went. He was invented solely because Troy Denning wanted to have a reference that Dala's assistant had a pair of chitlicks. And I was like, okay, so I made this assistant that had one, and I was like, well, maybe something happened to the other, so I'll just give him one. I like that idea. And then the rest, you know, is legends, as they say now. Not history, legends. So yeah, he would be fun to revisit again. It was just so much fun writing him. He was so deadpan.
I loved him. I just liked he was so normal and surrounded by crazy people.
Yeah, exactly.
So show asks, since you watched, you know, the Clone Wars and you're a fan of the show, what was your favorite arc or episodes of that series?
Ooh, there's a lot of them.
Let's just ask you to pick a favorite child now.
Yeah, exactly. I will say a few, obviously, was the Night Sister arc. You know, that got me in, as they say, all the feels. Beautifully done and very powerful. The Mortis one was very, very cool. And the Fives, oh God.
Oh, yeah.
Following that group and just watching us lose them one by one was so sad. And I loved Fives. I liked him actually right from the very beginning. And just the poignancy of that, just thank you. It ripped my heart out and stomped on it with both feet. So, yeah. There's some very, very, very good arcs in that show.
And speaking of Fives, that brought up a question I had about one of the big discussions in Dark Disciple is sort of, you know, making a decision to either assassinate someone or, in the case of Voss, the Jedi decide he needs to be executed, and you know, there's so much moral relativism going on at this time because of, you know, with the Clone Wars and everything. How do you go about portraying that? And I think that was one of the things the Clone Wars did so well too, is, you know, the Jedi are fighting a war that they're not supposed to be fighting and using clones to fight, but yet they're the good guys.
So. Yeah. When they approached me and with the script, and like I said, I bet there was something leading up to it.
Right.
But with the script, we open with Voss standing in front of the council and they're like, okay, we want you to kill Dooku. You know, just pretty much we open with that. I'm like, that's not going to fly. We need a little bit of we need to be coaxed into this.
Right.
As readers. And so, yeah, there is a lot of it. And that's why I wanted to show. And yet at the same time, if you killed one person, you saved 20 billion people, you know, including mm-hmm. children, you know, it becomes a little gray. It becomes a little, well, maybe. And one of the lovely things about Kenobi, what he evolved to be in the book was the conscience.
Yeah.
And he is a loyal Jedi and he will follow orders and but there was something that he didn't like this from the beginning. He kind of tried to talk himself into it and he supported it. And towards the end, you know, it's just his conscience is just screaming at him. By the end, he's just like, this is wrong. This is wrong. And so it was lovely to have him there to write from his point of view with the mixture of feelings and emotions, the conflict within him.
And going along with that, you had Obi-Wan playing the conscience. You also had Anakin there. And there was a lot of times in the book where I just laughed because Anakin would say something and I would say, you are such a hypocrite. So is that a conscience decision or did that just kind of come about as the story was writing and you realize, hey, there's a character here who's doing things he's not supposed to be doing and oh, here's Anakin over here, too. Let's just point that out.
Well, I think it was immediate because, I mean, how many secret Jedi romances are there in Star Wars? There's not all that many.
Right.
And, you know, since he was so front and center, it's interesting that I have gotten a lot of feedback about the scene with him and Padme.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was something that I wanted very much to include. And because I just really felt we needed to see it. I felt we needed to see this relationship, which eventually goes so horribly wrong. We needed to see it going right. And we needed to have Anakin be there and just be happy in this, you know, kind of no drama situation, just hanging out with his wife, you know, for an evening. And is this wrong? Well, yeah, because, you know, Ventress is, and he is a hypocrite, but he's not really aware of it.
Right.
And when he kind of starts, you know, he starts talking and then he hears himself and he's kind of like, yeah, you're kind of right. But not really, you know, yeah. It really is okay. Here's why, you know? So yes, it was great to have him kind of as a foil. And, I didn't want to make it a major plot thread. I thought too much of it, it would be like, you know, hammering the reader with it, but I did want to introduce it.
Yeah. I also appreciated whenever he would make a comment as far as, you know, going over to the dark, you know, how Voss had gone over the dark side. And one of the things that Ventress kind of hammered into Voss was that he had to be dark in order to kill Dooku. Yeah. And she was right. Yeah. As far as, you know, how Dooku met his end.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And that was a little bit of foreshadowing on my part. Mm-hmm. There were a few lines in there and tried not to be too heavy handed, but we as readers do know this going in. And it's impossible to pretend that the readers don't.
Right. So at Dragon Con last year, you were on one of my favorite panels of the whole convention, which was the Tropes in Star Wars panel. So just real quick, do you have a favorite literary trope and a least favorite literary trope?
Oh, man. Let me pause and get my deer in the headlights.
You can have a list.
I guess I don't know if we consider this a trope, but and this is, it's so gaggy, and I hate saying it, but really this is, there's no other way to say it. It's the triumph of the human spirit. And that's something that really draws me. That's one of the two questions, along with what makes good people do bad things. How does somebody good end up joining the Nazi party? How does Anakin, you know, turn to the dark side? All these things. How do good people do bad things? And the Clone Wars gave us, you know, several seasons of that descent, which was amazing to watch. But there, you hear these stories of people who have been subjected to the most horrible things you can possibly imagine, and they don't let it destroy them, and they don't let it bring them off course, and they keep getting up, and they keep fighting, and they keep going toward what they believe in. And I am in slack-jawed awe of people who can do that, and it's a passion of mine to try and explore as a literary thing.
One of the things I also really appreciated about the book was that it didn't linger on, you know, what happened with Voss when he was with Dooku. You know, it showed enough for the reader to figure out, you know, he had been tortured or, you know, and driven to the dark side, but that, you know, it kind of let the reader make their own choice. So and it's always a hard thing because, you know, show rather than tell. But how did you go about, you know, figuring out, you know, exactly how long he'd been there? Did you, you know, decide, okay, this is what had happened to him? Or, you know, was it always kind of a let's leave this up to the reader sort of thing?
Oh, man, it's, you develop an instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done this often enough as to where you need to be graphic and grab the reader by the throat and force their eyes open and say, see this, you need to see this. This is important. And when you need to trust that the reader has a very vivid imagination and he or she is bringing that to the book and a couple of references and let it happen off stage is so much more powerful. So that's just something that I've developed once I get in there and the pacing and such. There were certain scenes that were depicted in the script, and as they had dialogue that I wanted to include, I obviously needed to address that. But I also wanted, with that particular thing, I didn't have an exact knowledge of how much time had passed, because again, these were episodes that were scattered through two seasons, and I really didn't know. And so to err on the side of caution was my guiding principle. And also I thought it was really more unsettling for Voss to have been in such a space where he didn't know. You know, how many times have I screamed? I don't know. When did I last? I don't know when I last ate. I don't know. And that disorientation, that that lack of these things that we measure our lives by. When did I eat? When did I go to bed? You know, it's things like that. To not have that was, I think, its own kind of torture.
And as far as Voss, one of the big mysteries is he dark or is he not? And I really liked that you didn't really know as a reader, and neither did the characters. So how did you address that as far as, you know, that keeping that mystery, but also making it obvious later on when the reader realizes, okay, yeah, he is well, dark.
One of the things that I wanted to do was to make sure they both got, you know, good screen time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that in the latter part, if we got into his point of view at all, we'd know.
Right.
So you'll notice, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but now you know, that towards the latter part, we do not get into his point of view at all.
Right. Yeah.
It's always Ventress's or Kenobi's, and we have to judge based on what we see and what we're told. And that was a deliberate choice on my part to keep that mysterious. And we also, story group and, well, my editor and I, and through her story group, we wanted to talk about, well, why doesn't somebody sense it? You know, I mean, why doesn't somebody figure this out? And I thought, well, what if Voss doesn't even acknowledge it to himself? What if he doesn't know? What if he thinks he's still on the good path? And like Anakin earlier on, it just starts rationalizing it, and not really seeing and acknowledging what's there. And I thought that would be a lot more interesting than him saying, I'm dark now and, you know, I'm going to twirl my mustache.
Yeah.
Triple V in the chat asked, do you know if the Clone Wars team had other plans for Voss after the Dark Disciple arc?
I do not. It would be very interesting to see him again. And I have no idea. This is the thing about working in a shared universe is later the architects of this world can choose to take things in a different direction. You know, who knows? We might see a story where Voss actually does fall back to the dark side. Or we might see one where he's like this absolute beacon rock steady of the light side. And that's really what I would like to see. That's my personal desire, because Ventress bought that for him at such a cost. And in the writing, I believe I wrote him that he really understood that. Mm-hmm. And that this was going to be the sort of thing that he would wake up every morning resolving to honor and go to bed every night resolving to honor and never, ever forget. And that's what I would love to see.
If only there was another animated show on TV that could use him in that way.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
Hint, hint, Dave Filoni. So I had to bring up, I am a recovering World of Warcraft addict. And I have read several of the books, one of them being Arthas, which I thought it was really interesting because I did not like Jaina Proudmoore until I read that book. And then I started reading Fate of the Jedi and you were writing Jaina Solo at the same time. And I hadn't really been a fan of hers either. And I said, huh, Christy Golden makes me like characters named Jaina. How does that work?
I joked if I ever had a daughter, I would absolutely have to name her Jaina.
Yeah. So, and you've written a lot in that universe and other universes as well. Is there a difference between them, or, you know, as far as writing Star Wars versus writing Warcraft, or do you all approach it from the same aspect?
I think every franchise has a feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the voices are very different. If you would read a Warcraft book and then immediately follow it with Dark Disciple, I think you would see there's it's looser. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is a little looser. It's a little more freewheeling. Warcraft has the weight of being this epic world with its deep primitive cultures and it's enlightened more, hopefully, but not necessarily. Magical wielding peoples and all the history and things behind it. And so for me, that's the difference. I mean, I think if you read like War Crimes and then read Dark Disciple, they both are very intense. Both have a lot of action in them. Both have a lot of moral dilemma things. But hopefully, I think you would see a voice. StarCraft is way different, for instance, right, than my World of Warcraft books. You read a StarCraft in a WoW book, there's like, whoa, yeah. Because that world is different. It's different still from Star Wars. So I think if you, when I did the Fable, it was all full of puns and very lighthearted whimsy, and things like that. So I really try to get a feel for the original IP and then create a work that suits it.
Cool. So I have to ask, did you play Warcraft at all? Is research,
do
of
I?
Course.
Or, oh, sweetheart. Oh, yeah.
What, right, racing class?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or all of them?
Warcraft. A friend of mine knew that I had written Lord of the Clans, and he was playing, well, I've never played a video game in my life, and we were spending Christmas with him, my husband and I, and he says, oh, Christy, let me show you Thrall, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see Thrall, and so he hops on, he's an undead, and he hops on his skeletal horse, and he gallops, you know, through Orgrimmar, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is so cool. And there's Thrall, and he's got his blue eyes. Have you come to solve the Horde? You know, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. And then he's like, let me show you some of the other races. And I ended up dinking around with a Tauren. And so I now have a very special place in my heart. And I held out for 2 months because I said, if I get into this, I'm going to fall in head first. And I held out for 2 months. And then I did. And I've never looked back. I love the game.
That is true. That's, I haven't gone back because I know I'll never get out again.
See, fortunately for me, it's a business expense.
It is. So. It's research. So you did announce at San Diego Comic-Con you'll be writing a prequel to the movie. So are there any other stories you can tell, projects you can tell us about or elaborate a little bit about what that story will be?
I am under an NDA that involves being stolen off in the night if I violate it. So, unfortunately, the only thing I can say is there is a prequel. It is for the movie, and I'm writing it.
Awesome.
Hopefully, there will be more later.
I know another podcast we listened to, Morning Stream with Scott Johnson. Scott's very excited that you're writing this book.
Oh, thank you.
So obviously we're at San Diego Comic Con. Do you have any other conventions coming up where readers can catch you at?
Right now, no. I'm kind of buckling down and getting my work done through the late summer and the fall. I'm doing a couple of local signings here in the next week or so, and that's really kind of it for now.
Cool.
Comic Con was enough for any given year. That was amazing. Right. So much fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We had a great time chatting with you, and we really enjoyed Dark Disciple. And
thank you so much. I enjoyed it. There's some great questions.
Thanks. Definitely go and pick up Dark Disciple, hopefully we will chat with you soon about other books.
I hope so too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And welcome back again. We would like to give a big thanks to Christy Golden for coming on and talking Star Wars, Dark Disciple, and Warcraft with us. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. So we may be back next week. We don't know if we're recording next week yet or not. If we are back, we'll be doing a San Diego Comic-Con recap.
Of non-Star Wars things.
Yeah, of non-Star Wars things.
We're still pretty, you know, overwhelmed with that behind-the-scenes video and watching it. Possibly every day to start the day.
Yeah.
Possibly.
And we're going to try and get a guest on who was at San Diego Comic-Con. So we're going to work on that and see what we can do there. We've also got our Attack of the Clones commentary recording coming up soon.
Yep. So we'll either be doing that next week or the week after. But either way, we'll be back next week. Possibly, probably later in the week, though. But we will be back. Yeah.
We will be back. Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, I think it's time to say goodbye for the day.
Yes.
All right. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links on the site. Help us keep the lights on. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles at Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we're the Tashi Station Network. We are available on the iTunes Store and Stitcher. If you like what you hear, please do leave a review. It helps us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. Thanks for listening to another episode. Thank you, Christy Golden, for coming on. We will catch you all next time.
Bye for the Alliance.
This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.